Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mets 360 here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Brian Jura, and we're back again after an unplanned two-week hiatus. And I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show my friend and fellow Mets 360 writer, Charlie Hangley. Charlie, thanks for stepping in here at the last moment.
Anytime, Brian.
Well, let's get right to it. Since the last time that we talked, the Mets have hired Mickey Callaway to be their new manager. And I want to know, what are your thoughts on Callaway in particular and the process of hiring a pitching coach to be the manager in general?
Well, I like Callaway a lot. I like his enthusiasm. His enthusiasm is infectious, absolutely infectious. I mean, if he can't get you excited, then, you know, you might want to check your own pulse because, you know, I think he could inspire a rock. So I'm excited for the coming season, just from that standpoint, even absent any great roster moves, which I don't hold out much hope for. I think Callaway will bring a dynamic we haven't seen around this team since Bobby Valentine, really. In terms of hiring pitching coaches in general, it's definitely new. You don't see it all that often. I know John Farrell obviously had some pretty good success with the Red Sox, and Bud Black has done well. And I'm not sure, but I think Bruce Bochy might have been a pitching coach as well, even though he was a catcher. It can work. You just don't hear about it a lot.
Now, Fred Wilpon once famously claimed that Art Howe lit up the room during his interview. And if Wilpon thought that about Howe, I wonder what he would think about Callaway, who certainly seems to be a notch or two higher than Howe on the enthusiasm roster schedule. Can't think of the word that I'm looking for. But anyway, we were talking about pitching coaches, and you mentioned a couple of the more recent ones. I like to go back even a little bit further, and I think about guys like Roger Craig and even before him, Bob Lemon. So, like you say, it's not a common thing to do, but people have been very successful in that, and I don't think that there should be any kind of stigma attached to him because he's a pitching coach and those guys don't become managers. And I don't know the reason why that they're not given the chance, but certainly we can't say that we haven't seen people be making the successful jump from pitching coach to manager.
Right. I agree.
All right. Well, Mets blog is reporting that the team is interested in reuniting Callaway with one of his former pupils in Cleveland, and that's reliever Brian Shaw. And, you know, that made sense to me, but then I saw that the alleged price tag, a 3-year, $27 million contract. And, I have to say that kind of knocked me on my heels a little bit. What do you think about that, both Shaw in general and that price tag in particular?
Oh, I like Shaw a lot. He's a wonderful relief pitcher, but not at $9 million a year. I'm sorry. it wasn't all that long ago that relievers were hardly paid anything at all. And I'm obviously in relative terms and in major league terms, or got that much recognition. It's only in the last, couple of postseasons that relief pitching has had such a premium put on it, and people are starting to take notice. So I think it's a little bit of a jump to get up to that number right now. Maybe in a year or so, you'll see relief pitchers commanding that kind of money. But for Brian Shaw right now, that's a little bit off the charts.
We're going to be looking at either arbitration raises or settlements for both the first two options in the bullpen for the Mets. And, of course, that's Familia and A.J. Ramos. And those figures are going to be right around $9 million, I would expect, $7, $8, $9 million, somewhere in that range. And just the idea of paying $27 million to your top three, and then you add Jerry Blevins, who I think is $7, $7.5 million. I just find it very hard to believe that they're going to be spending $34 million on four relief pitchers. That would not have one of them be Aroldis Chapman. That would seem to be a little crazy.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. It's going to come to that, and in fairly short order. But it's, you know, we're not there yet. You know, we can't go crazy.
You mentioned because of all of the success and focus that's been on relief pitchers, specifically Andrew Miller, in the past couple of postseasons, that people are seeing more value in the bullpen. And I think that's even been one of the things that we've batted around at the site, maybe the way to counteract the injuries to the starting rotation is to build up the biggest bullpen that we can, and perhaps from that way it might make some sense. But I mean, I do think it's an open question. If you have only $30 million to spend this offseason, do you want to spend $9 million of it on your third or fourth reliever?
Exactly. And believe me, we as Met fans shouldn't ever question the value of a bullpen. We stared one right in the face in the World Series 2 years ago. You know, so we know how valuable it can be.
And a late season meltdown back in 2008 as well, as if we needed further information. But all right, enough of that. I want to talk about one of my favorite Mets the past few years, and that's Curtis Granderson. The Dodgers left him off of their World Series roster, and this, of course, was the last year of the contract that he signed with the Mets. And I want to know, do you think this is it for him, or do you think he'll be back playing somewhere in 2018?
I think he'll be playing somewhere in 2018, and I think it might very well be Citi Field. I don't think he'll be the starter. I don't think he'll command all that high a salary on what was and really an off year for him. But I think he's still got something in the tank. I think he'll be back for at least another year, maybe two. And one of those two, I think, will be spent in Queens.
You know, it's such a different dynamic that players have now. I mean, Granderson just finished up a four-year, $60 million contract. And clearly the only reason he's going to play again is if he's got the burning desire to play. There should be no financial incentive to do so whatsoever. But Granderson is such a well-liked, intelligent guy that you would think that he would have his pick of things that he wanted to do in post-career, whether that be a manager or broadcaster or front office guy or whatever. And it'll be real curious to me to see if, you know, the fire is burning with him and he comes back and maybe plays on a $5 million contract this year.
Yeah. And I can just see him for no other reason. I mean, I know you don't want to spend money on this, but having him in the clubhouse is such a plus for any team. Again, you don't want to, you know, whatever you're paying him, it's got to be, you know, predicated on ability and what he can do with a bat in his hands or with a glove. But having him around is a plus for any team.
our annual GM simulation where we get 30 guys to act as the GMs of the 30 MLB clubs. And I was the Mets for the first time this year, and I brought back Curtis Granderson in that role that you're talking about. Fourth outfielder, somebody to add protection in case either Cespedes or Conforto isn't ready to go either at the beginning of the year or at any point during the season. And I guess I kind of envisioned a 350, 400 at-bat role for him. And I think that if you spot him, he could be an extremely valuable person, not just for his contributions on the field, but as you mentioned, in the clubhouse as well.
Yeah, and that number seems about right in terms of at-bats or plate appearances. You know, that's about what you can get out of him now and still get some value. If you go much higher than that, the production is just going to decline.
I want to maybe pull back a little bit instead of focusing so much on the Mets. I want to talk about MLB as a whole. And one thing that we heard a little bit during the playoffs, at least on a national level, is talking about MLB and expanding perhaps to 32 teams. And I want to know, do you think that MLB is ready for expansion right here in 2018?
This year, absolutely not. I mean, I know it's been a while, but we're really kind of not that far removed from the talk about contraction, never mind expansion. You know, quite frankly, I think the two Florida teams are a drag on each league. But that being said, expansion to 32 teams is probably going to happen. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, it would take a lot of doing, but it wouldn't shock me to see a third team be in the New York metro area, whether it be in Brooklyn or New Jersey. You know, the older guys in MLB will probably push for Brooklyn for its historical aspect. And it actually wouldn't surprise me to see a team in Las Vegas. Now that the door has been open with the NHL and the NFL, you know, whatever stigmas attached in terms of gambling or anything like that, you know, a market's a market and a buck's a buck. So, and the powers that be in MLB, you know, I've never seen anybody turn down money. So I think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen within the next 2 years, but I think it'll happen within the next 10.
A couple of things that I want to bring up. You were talking about a third team in greater New York City area, and I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that that would be a wonderful idea, but of course you have to deal with the territory restrictions, and I think it's 50 miles from within the current stadium has to have the approval of the team, and I don't think either way that the Mets or the Yankees would allow that to happen, even though I don't think it would really materially affect them. Vegas would be an interesting option, and I think that, you know, if like you said, that, you know, we're 5-10 years down the road before it happens, that way baseball gets to see perhaps what the pitfalls are with either NHL or an NFL team out there in Sin City. But the first thing that jumped into my mind is that everyone was so excited about the Mets getting away from Las Vegas, and now all of a sudden we're going to put a major league team in there. So I don't know exactly how that would work. A dome or a retractable roof stadium, I guess, would almost have to be the way to go to combat those 100-plus degree days that are all too common in the summer.
Right. It would have to be a dome, probably. And now, in terms of, you know, in terms of the territorial issue in New York, listen, you get all the owners together. You say, we're going to put a third team in the metropolitan area. They're going to pay a king's ransom to get in the club, whoever the owner is. It might even be Donald Trump by that point. They're going to pay a king's ransom to get into the club. So why don't we give the Mets and the Yankees a little greater cut of the, you know, MLB advanced media money in exchange for, you know, a waiver of their territorial rights? I could see that happening.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the number that they would ask for would be so astronomically high that the rest of the owners wouldn't even consider it. But
Every man has his price.
Without a doubt. Now I want to circle back to something that you at least implied, if not outright said. You were talking about we're not that far removed from contraction. And, of course, contraction was a labor negotiation ploy more than anything else. But I do think that it struck a chord, at least with some people, about, hey, you know, the pitching's diluted. There's not enough talent, yada, yada, yada. Do you feel that the issue right here in the right now or in the next 5 to 10 years, do you think that the available talent holds is enough to stock 32 teams?
I actually don't. I'm not one of these doomsayers that says, you know, baseball's on the way out and it's declining in popularity. Well, there's no doubt that it is declining and has declined in popularity as compared to other sports, but it's also declined in terms of participation. You know, there's been a great discussion the past, you know, 5 years or so about the decline in participation among African Americans in baseball. There's, you know, that most African American kids are more gravitating towards basketball and football. And so with that sort of decline in participation at a young age, you don't get developed and you don't develop the love for the game as you get older because you're not really doing it or paying attention to it, you know? So, you know, there is a problem with dilution of talent. There's just, you know, there's not that endless supply of, you know, robust young men who, you know, want to take a bat in their hands or throw a ball. You know, there's more of them that are, you know, wanting to put a ball through a hoop or hit a wide receiver with a clothesline pass or, quite frankly, sit and exercise their thumbs with a video game. So, yeah, I can – there is definitely a talent dilution issue.
No, I don't have the population numbers in front of me, but I do know that the height of African-American representation in Major League Baseball came somewhere in the early 1970s when I think it was about 21%. But I don't think that the overall population or the overall number of people in the United States here in late 2017, I don't think it's 21% African-American. So I don't know if that's necessarily the number that we need to be comparing it to. And I also think that we see a lot more international exposure into the game now. We have so many people from the Dominican, and we're hopeful that in the next few years we'll have something worked out with Cuba and all of the other Latin American countries and Australia and the Far East and everywhere else where they love to play baseball. So I would take the opposite point from you. I would think that there is the talent pool for 32 teams here. I think we just have to firm up the cities to make sure that we don't end up with a repeat of what we've seen in the Florida locations. I want to get talking about the Mets after our little detour there. And I want to talk about a famous quote from our general manager where he's essentially said that defense is not as important as offense. And do you think that's an acceptable belief for a GM of a team built around pitching?
Quite frankly, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, there's in the early days of the sabermetric movement, there was a quote, I think it was probably from Bill James or one of his acolytes anyway, that read, good pitching is good defense. You know, there's no good pitching without good defense. And that I think says it all because you can't strike everybody out. Nobody's thrown a 27 strikeout game. It just the human arm can't take that, and you can't expect that. I thought 20 was unattainable until I saw Roger Clemens do it. It goes hand in hand. It's gotta have You got to use the eight guys behind you or seven guys behind you.
I don't think there's any question that defense is not as important as offense, especially if you have a pitching staff capable of getting not only strikeouts but weak contact. But we saw the shortcomings of that approach this past year when the pitchers were injured and the defense was even – or let me specify, the infield defense was even worse than what we thought it was going to be. And part of that was Asdrubal Cabrera playing shortstop, which we hope he doesn't play this year. And part of that was playing Wilmer Flores anywhere in the infield, and hopefully we won't see as much of that this year either. But hopefully with Ahmed Rosario coming up and then maybe a new guy to play either second or third base coming via free agency, perhaps we'll see a tighter defense and something on the infield, at least a little bit more like major league average rather than scraping the bottom of the barrel like we were in 2017.
I can only hope. I can only hope we get a major league quality infield defense.
All right. Well, talking about dominating pitching, you know, it's hard to put him in this category now, but Matt Harvey came back at the end of last year. He was once a dominating pitcher. He had decent enough velocity. He was consistently in the mid 90s, but it seemed to me that his breaking balls didn't have any bite and his command wasn't all that great. And I want to know, do you think he can recapture those things and be an effective pitcher or maybe even better in 2018?
Oh, I would love it. I would love it if he could. That would be wonderful news for the team if he could recapture that. But I don't think the Matt Harvey we saw in 2013 and 2015. I don't think that guy's coming back again. Not without a major tear down and build back up of his mechanics, because I think he, with all the injuries that he's had, I think he's. Mechanics, which were beautiful when he came up. I mean, he was a wonderful pitcher to watch because he was so fluid and his motion was so good. I think it's going to have to be rebuilt. I think it's gotten all messed up with all the ailments he's had. If that happens, then we could be in for a treat. But short of a total redo of his mechanics and his approach, it's not likely we're going to see that guy again. I'd like to see a semblance of it, you know, but it's the days of Harvey's better are long gone.
Now, this is the last year that he's under team control following the 2018 season. Matt Harvey can become a free agent. And I know a lot of people put a lot of stock into the, oh, it's his free agent year, so he'll have everything and every reason to go out and be his best. And I'm wondering, A, if you believe in that, and if so, B, if that would be all the incentive he needed to put in all of the work that he had to do to get back to that 2013 or 2015 level.
Well, I am a believer in that, mainly because I've seen it happen too often to not believe it. If nothing else, look at Ryan Zimmerman this year. You know, not that he's going anywhere, but I think his contract is close to being done. Again, I'm sure the will is there. I'm sure the willingness to work is there. I just don't know that, you know, how much more wear and tear he can take.
Yeah, that's certainly a strong enough reason to be bearish about his ability to come back. I try to look for the positive, and the fact that he can get 95 on a regular basis, I think is a very good thing. And I think with an off season to focus on conditioning and command, I mean, I would expect his command to be back. To me, the big question is if he's going to be able to make his breaking balls move like they had in the past. And I think anyone who tells you that they know one way or the other is not doing anything more than guessing. I just don't think we've been down this road enough and have enough comps or have enough confidence in how he's going to react from the various surgeries that he's had to tell whether or not that he can come back with what they used to call Doc Gooden's curve, the Lord Charles. I don't know if we'll ever see Matt Harvey throw a Lord Charles again.
Yeah, I'd love to see it, but I wouldn't bank on it.
All right. Well, we've reached the point of the show. It's crazy prediction time. I'm going to give you a crazy prediction, and I'm going to ask you for your comment, and then I'm going to ask you to give me your crazy prediction. Are you ready?
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So my crazy prediction is that after making it to the World Series, that the Dodgers are going to reduce payroll, and while they won't get quite down to the luxury cap threshold, I expect that their payroll will be $20 million less than it was the year before, which I can't imagine has happened any time recently here among World Series participants. So I want to know, how crazy is that?
That is definitely within the realm of possibility. I mean, they've already started. They cut loose Andre Ethier last week. I don't suspect that Adrian Gonzalez is going to be making any appearances for them anytime soon. So that's a big number off the books.
But I think they still have to pay him though, don't they? Gonzalez?
Well, that's true, but still it's not as far fetched as you might think, especially because I mean those guys, that system is just a baseball factory. You know, it's like it's scary to see all the prospects coming out of that system. It's like the Yankees in the 50s. You know, they just keep churning guys after guy after guy to replace the guy going out. It's unreal.
The one thing you mentioned the Ethier, and they are responsible for a couple of million-dollar buyout. But the other thing to go along with that is they picked up their option on Logan Forsyth, which will add a little bit more to the payroll. But all right, so I didn't come up with a crazy prediction, so give me yours.
Okay. My crazy prediction? Next year, even with all the talent coming up and coming through and the way the kids played, quote-unquote kids played this year, the Yankees will be a 500 team at best next year. I think they'll go through a little bit of a shakeout like the Astros did between 2015 and 2017. Houston's 2016 was miserable. And they fought back and came within a couple of games of the playoffs in 16, but they ended up missing out and ended up right around the 500 mark. I think I see the same thing happening to the Yankees, if for the only reason that every team on the rise like that tends to have a season of retrenchment, where things don't break all the right way, where they do get an injury or two that knocks them cockeyed. I can see that happening. And then, you know, look out for them in 2019, because they'll have all that. They'll have A, a playoff run, and B, a quote-unquote disastrous season under their belt, and that tends to toughen a team up. So I say 500 for the Yankees in 18, no playoffs, but winning the division, probably winning close to 100 games in 2019.
All right. I'm going to go out and say crazy, not because I think that a 500 record is unusual or unexpected, but the 100 wins, I have a hard time seeing that right now. Of course, a lot of things can change between now and then, but I'm getting my stamp out and I'm dubbing you crazy.
Well, call me crazy then.
All right, crazy. Well, we got about time for one more question. I want to ask you about Juan Lagares. He might be the best defensive center fielder in Major League Baseball. I think the Gold Gloves are either getting ready to be announced or just were announced, but he didn't have enough innings in the center to qualify. But despite how good he's been in the field, he's never really hit. And I want to know, do you think that there's a minimum amount he needs to hit to justify carrying his glove?
Minimum. Well, I'm not sure about minimum amount to hit. I think there's a minimum amount he's got to get on. Because as you pointed out so eloquently a couple of years ago, his offense, he was a creature of BABIP, you know. So it was. He's got to get on. He needs other ways to get on base besides hitting into good luck. So that's the minimum I see. I think he's got to have a minimum of, 360, 370 on base percentage to be valuable.
That would be, I would think, an almost impossible hurdle for him to reach. You know, my issue with Lagares is he doesn't walk and he doesn't hit for power, so he's at the mercy of those hits falling in. And I don't think he's ever going to walk, so I'd like to see him, you know, swing for the fences. And you would have thought that Kevin Long, with all of the success he had in getting guys like Murphy to elevate the ball, could have done the same with Lagares, but his fly ball percentage actually went down last year. But so keep him or trade him?
Keep him. Keep him at least until Conforto comes back.
All right, there you go. That's our last word tonight. I'd like to thank Charlie Hangley for joining us. And, Charlie, any preview on tomorrow's story?
As soon as I think of it, I'll let you know.
Fair enough. All right, well, thanks for tuning in, and please join us again next Wednesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. Good night, everyone, and goodbye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.